A cathedral is both a protest and a proclamation. This is a quote I keep on my desktop from the late Dean of Salisbury Cathedral in England, Sidney Evans, who wrote it nearly 50 years ago. A cathedral is both a protest and a proclamation. A protest against all ideologies and political systems which deny or diminish the spirituality, dignity, and true liberty of human beings. And the cathedral, he says, is a proclamation of the Christian way as pilgrimage by which human beings can find help in their search for the answer to their most fundamental questions. Who am I? What shall I hope for? What should I do? I used that quote in the introduction of the liturgical minister training this past Wednesday as an invitation for all who gathered there, and I would say by extension all who are here today, to frame our work of worship with these missional purposes in mind. A cathedral is both a protest and a proclamation. We are all liturgical dancers, invited to move to the song of God's grace flowing into our lives, prompting us in turn to share the healing balm of God's love into a broken, hurting world. This wayfinding to dignity for all is central to our existence and to this cathedral's purpose. It is our common work, the work of the people, liturgy, the work of the people, guided by bedrock tenets of faith and by rites that reveal the life-giving love of God as the dignifying way to abundant life. But it bears saying that the tenets of faith are nothing more than sound and fury signifying nothing unless they are translatable to the dignified experience whereby all might discover God inviting us to ask our fundamental questions: who am I? What may I hope for? What should I do? The church is not an ideological or political system meant to mete out dignity, although it has, through much of its history, behaved as if it were, much to its own detriment and for the suffering of many who were denied the dignity and liberty of their full humanity. And certainly the church has, across much of its history, aligned itself with the ideologies and political systems of the powers and principalities of the world that have seen fit to subjugate in the name of the church or even in the name of God. And whenever it has cut that path, violence inevitably follows in its wake. And the tenets of such a faith as that don't translate into life-giving dignity for all. So I would say again, this cathedral, if it is to be faithful to its mission, must be a protest against all ideologies and political systems that deny or diminish the dignity and liberty of all. And this cathedral must be a proclamation of pastoral concern for all. Indeed, I would go even further to say our pastoral sensibilities must guide our politics, or we risk becoming just another ideological system. And the only thing I am sure of when we do that is there will be violence that follows. So on this Good Shepherd Sunday, when we heed the voice of the Christ who speaks gentle pastoral wisdom in our direction, we, you and I, are invited once more to consider who in our calculus is outside the bounds of human dignity. Or more to the point, what or against whom exactly are we protesting? Christ, the Good Shepherd, consistently holds space for that life-giving dignity to be afforded to all. He staked his life on it. This cathedral should too. Jesus protested ideologies denying the dignity of all, but he did so not originating in a political stance, but because of the pastoral pain he felt when he saw their suffering. So what I'm about to say this morning, friends, arises from a pastor's heart, not political hegemony. And I hope you're able to hear it as such. For a decade now, as your dean, I have resisted the impulse to degrade this pulpit with ideological righteousness or political correctness. I have no desire to begin now. But in light of this week's swirl of ideological spin surrounding reproductive rights in this nation, I feel obliged to say a few things guided by pastoral insights I have gained in my 20 years as a practicing physician, sitting with women facing difficult decisions, and now nearly 20 years as a priest too. The fact that this is Mother's Day is not lost on me. Now, I have to admit, I am by no means the best qualified to do this, given my gender and station in life. But I stand before you this morning as the dean of your cathedral, and I'm willing to stake my life on what I'm about to say. First, you should know that the Episcopal Church has repeatedly since 1967, adopted formal position statements affirming full and equal access to health care for all genders, and that access to decisions surrounding reproductive rights must be reserved to the individual in consultation with their health care providers. Full stop. This series of formal position statements includes an action from General Convention 2018 when I was there on the floor of the House of Deputies, and I voted in the majority, with the majority, adopting a statement, quote, that equitable access to women's health care, including women's reproductive health care, is an integral part of a woman's struggle to assert her dignity and worth as a human being. End quote. Let me capture the last part of that again. It's important. These rights are an integral part of a woman's struggle to assert her dignity and worth as a human being. Here in 2022, 4 years later, if I were voting again, I would adopt the same resolution, except expand the language to afford such access not just to women, but to any gender whose dignity is denied by lack of access or autonomy over one's body and health. So, friends, what is unfolding in our nation's system of governance is an abrogation of that dignity. That is a pastor's statement. It is a political statement, but it arises from a pastor's heart, not the other way around. The struggle to assert women's dignity and worth as human beings is not new. We know this, but to cite just a few distressing examples, no state in this nation outlawed marital rape until 1975. The last states to do it, not till 1993. No man was found liable for sexual harassment until 1977. I don't think that meant that it never happened before then. A woman could be fired from her job simply for becoming pregnant until a protective law was passed in 1978. So what I am trying to say to you this morning from a pastor's heart is there is grief in this room. There is grief being felt this week when a group of ideologues in our nation's capital and elsewhere seem poised to dishonor the autonomy and rights of humans simply based on their gender, but with far-reaching implications for many who can feel the vortex of violence already swirling around them. So there is grief. No matter what you think on these issues, there is grief. And the church has something to say and hold with grief. Now, the second thing I would say to you as a pastor is it's helpful to remember, my friends, that grief can often express as anger or denial or depression or a whole range of other emotions, all understandable because something has been lost, is being lost, and it is precious. And I am sorry for that. But then I would also be quick to add, you need not experience this grief, this loss in isolation. We can make our way together, protesting, proclaiming with our best sensibilities as a pastoral entity, guided, of course, by the Good Shepherd and his pastoral heart of care for you and me and for us all. I would say that your priests are available to sit with you and hold the space, whatever that is. But I need to say a couple of more things. I will say this morning that whatever actions unfold in this nation in the coming weeks, I believe it is a manifestation of a deeper evil at work in our time. And what I know about evil is that it wants to be seen as good. And what I know about evil is that it wants nothing more than for good people to turn on one another. Evil feeds off the violence and the hardened heart from which it arises. Therefore, the invitation for this cathedral is to protest from a pastoral heart informing our politics, not the other way around. We can do this, friends. And we can find our way together even when we don't agree on all the details. And then finally, to those of you who have fought for and have guarded reproductive rights and all the other rights not apparently guaranteed by the Constitution, I would say to you, as a pastor, I suspect you are weary, exhausted even by all of this. So to you and to any with ears to hear, I would point you to the passage from Revelation this morning. Take the leaflet home with you and sit with it this week. It presents a heavenly scene, which you see is not about downrange. It's about right here, right now. It's a now and not yet. It's a both and. The heavenly scene where John is asked, "Who are these robed in white, and where have they come from?" And then he receives the answer to his most fundamental question of hope. And he shares it with us. Well, these are they who have come out of the great ordeal. They have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. They worship God in God's temple. You see, they are liturgical dancers invited to move to the song of God's grace in their lives. We're told they will hunger and thirst no more. The Lamb will be their shepherd. He will guide them to springs of the water of life, and God will wipe away the tear from every eye. So I ask you, hold that image. Hold on to that image. Know that you are not alone. Know that this shepherd of ours is up to something, even now. And the invitation is, bring your questions, bring your hearts, bring your weariness, bring your bodies, bring your beings, bring your whole souls, your very entity, and know that the shepherd honors you, invites you, claims you, dignifies you, loves you forever and fully. This shepherd loves you fully and forever. Can I get an amen? Thank you.